Suddenly the king cried to Snowmane, and the horse sprang away. Behind him his banner blew in the wind, white horse green, but he outpaced it. After him thundered the knights of his house, but he was ever before them. Fey he seemed, or the battlefield of his fathers ran like new fire in his veins, and he was borne up on Snowmane like a god of old, even as Orome the Great in the Battle of the Valar when the world was young. His golden shield was uncovered, and lo, it shone like an image of the sun, and the grass flamed into green about the white feet of his steed. For morning came, morning and a wind from the sea, and the darkness was removed, and the hosts of Mordor wailed, and terror took them, and they fled, and died, and the hoofs of wrath rode over them. And then all the host of Rohan burst into song, and they sang as they slew, for the joy of battle was on them, and the sound of their singing that was fair and terrible came even to the city, the Ride of the Rohirrim. This is episode 13 of the Grey Company podcast, in which we continue our look at the four spheres of influence. Today we have a hard look at the tactics sphere, specializing in battle and martial prowess. Tactics is made to kill the servants of the enemy. What are the key cards that allow us to do this? Is tactics necessary to defeat enemies, or can it be left on the shelf?
Welcome to the Grey Company podcast. By the time you hear this, we will be just days away from Gen Con Indy, and we are so, so very excited about it. And we are so excited to meet any and all of you who will also be in attendance, but more on that later. My name is Derek, and on this episode, we get down and dirty with the tactic sphere. But before the bloodshed begins, let's do the introductions. Dan, how have you been since last we met?
Doing pretty well. Still doing the Austin local Lord of the Rings get together when I can, so that's been good.
Excellent. And Ian, how is we have to ask the mandatory question, because I'm like, you're not being asked it everywhere else you go. So how's dad life?
It's good, slowly but surely. I don't know, eking out some kind of normal schedule and figuring out how and where to sneak in games of LOTR. So it's a challenge, but I find virtual gaming a very big help to new dads and dad life. You could kind of get those games in when it's a bit hard to just get everything out on the table and play.
Yeah, the fact that just about every single tabletop game now has an app is definitely pretty handy. So what's new in Arizona, Matthew?
Well, first off, Ian, you found time to make Gravekarn a gem. I was shocked by that one. I'll admit I didn't read the article. I just scrolled down to the verdict. I was like, oh, he's going to say coaster for sure. And it was a gem, and now I got to read it. But Arizona, it's bloody hot, but it's good. We've got the local game group going strong. I have a new job. I'm looking forward to Gen Con. What else is new? I don't know. Just having a good old time trying to stay cool. So, but definitely looking forward to seeing you all in just a couple of days in real life as opposed to through Skype.
I know. So this could be the last episode.
It very well could. Oh, jeez.
Just kidding.
I like the delay there. That was nice.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's get down to it. As we did on our spirit episode, let's start by evaluating the intent of the sphere. So, according to the core rulebook, the sphere of tactics emphasizes a hero's martial prowess, particularly as it relates to combat and to overcoming other tactical challenges that might confront the players during a quest.
Hulk smash!
Hulk smash. That's really all there is to it. So thus far, the only tactical, quote-unquote, challenges we've encountered have been how to slay baddies most effectively. So, I mean, there probably isn't any disagreement, but are we in concurrence that the tactic sphere has lived up to its original description?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely has. I think the only odd wrinkle was the addition of the battle and siege keywords, which allowed tactics to be a questing powerhouse. But I think that still fit in with the theme of the sphere, because it was supposed to be, questing through basically battling or defending. So Overall, I think it's definitely the most straightforward of the spheres for sure.
Yeah, it's the most focused, and you can see when they try and deviate from that that it's some of the least popular. Like Theoden is one of the least popular tactics heroes, I would say, certainly in any of the playgroups that I've played in, and you can kind of see why is that when they try and get outside of like what is tactics good at, well, why would I do a bunch of tactics heroes in quest with them? You know, like it just doesn't make sense.
Certainly to me, tactics is the most consistent of the spheres as far as what it does and what it does well. While, you know, I would say in the core set days, you know, I would describe leadership as the jack of all trades sphere. It does a little bit of everything. Spirit is sort of the readying, the leadership has some of that, and the questing, and lore is a hodgepodge of other effects and counter decks, manipulation, location control, healing, those sorts of things. Tactics has pretty much consistently been attacking and defending I'm racking my brain for cards here that might fit outside of that. But I think almost every tactics card in some way, shape, or form, with the exception of Theoden, of course, is hitting that theme, unlike the other spheres. So yeah, I would agree that it lives up to its core set rule book description. And that's the final word. End of episode.
End of episode. Shut it
down.
I
think to answer Matthew's question, the one thing that is outside of the attack defense realm that tactics is still good at would be staging area targeting. So hands upon the bow, hail of stones is actually another good one if you've got a lot of cheap, you know, a bunch of cheap chump blocking allies, and something nasty comes in that with a really bad engagement effect. You know, this would be obviously outside of attacking defending. You just have a bunch of guys throw rocks at it and have it die in the staging area. So, you know, just any of those cards in fourth Aer Lingus kind of counts, but you have to wait until the combat phase, just like with Great U-Bow. So there's some limitations, but those would be the one category of cards I would say that are viable in tactics that are not strictly attack defense based.
Right, you could probably add direct damage as the third thing they're good at. Thalin from the core set being a great example.
Well, Team Covenant, as usual, put out a very high quality video. I guess it was about 3 weeks or so ago, and Jeremy gave some very good tips, kind of some general tips to deal with this very difficult game that we love so very well. He said that tactics and spirit are basically necessary to every deck. Every adventure pack has you questing and attacking, so you've got to have the two best spheres at those things. And so his point was that if you really want to get through these quests, you have to have tactics and spirit in maybe every deck. I don't know if that's what he meant, but that was kind of the feeling that I got, was like they have to be there. What do you guys think about that?
Again, I'll echo my earlier comment. You know, as the resident tactics expert, I suppose, I mean, it's funny how I have that reputation, and maybe it's well-deserved, but someone on our Facebook commented, Matthew playing I posted our deck lists, or hero lists, for Gen Con, because we want to have the nine members of the Fellowship as our heroes, and someone said, what? Matthew playing mono tactics? The funny thing is, I don't actually play it as much as perhaps I say I do. I guess my Rohan deck had Éomer in it, but it was two spirit heroes and only Éomer, so I play other things. I mean, I've tried Dwarves and Gondor and stuff, but tactics is my favorite, I suppose. But I would say no. I think for a good chunk of this game's life that tactics was the redheaded stepchild. Yeah. It was the one sphere you could do without and be relatively successful. At least I think that was the general consensus. Certainly for single-player games, maybe for two-player games, maybe not so much for three or four, but to me it really entirely depends on the number of players. In a single-player game, you're flipping one card. Provided the encounter deck is equal, you have a 1 out of 3 chance it's an enemy, but 2 out of 3 chances that it's not. But in a 2, 3, 4 player game, you're probably revealing an enemy every turn, which makes being able to handle the enemies more important, and certainly tactics does it best. But I'm not so sure that I would agree that you have to have tactics to deal with enemies. But as the game has progressed, with enemies having higher defense, a larger pool of hit points, maybe I would say that I don't think tactics is as much the redheaded stepchild as it used to be.
And battle quests, Heirs of Numenor really
certainly
like overnight changed the value of tactics, I would say. But I agree with you on this, Matthew. The one thing that I would add is I have a suspicion that he plays Jeremy. That's his name. I have a suspicion he plays predominantly multiplayer, and I think his statements are more accurate in that context. As someone who's played a lot of solo, it's absolutely not true that you need either of those two spheres. I actually, Bjorn's path was, went all the way from the core set scenarios all the way through Shadows of Mirkwood, and I've even continued that on and started doing Cause of Doom stuff with no spirit and no tactics, and you can beat, like, at least up to this point, I have not run into a scenario where I was not able to beat it with, and beat it pretty solidly with a leadership lore deck. So, what you end up doing, though, is all the things that we've talked about the tactics is good at, and when we had the spirit episode, we talked about the things that spirit's good at, you end up having to find ways to mitigate. So instead of having treachery cancellation, you use Denethor in solo, where he's very powerful, and the round before, you look at the top of the deck and go, okay, if that's Necromancer's Reach, I'm going to stick that on the bottom of the deck, or I'm going to not quest with anyone next turn and just take and just eat the threat, or whatever it is I'm going to do. And so you just find ways to work around the deficiencies of not having, you know, spirit. And same thing with the tactics is my solution to not having tactics in a deck has pretty much always been just throw a ton of dudes on the table.
It's not pack up and go home?
No.
That would be my solution.
No, it's not pack up and go home. And when you have guys like, you know, Leadership Boromir, Dane, you know, some of these leadership kind of general characters that have abilities that are global really get powerful as you start, you know, using the various tricks we have in the game now to get more, you know, more expensive and powerful allies on the board more quickly. Suddenly those global effects start to really add up, and you've got an army, and you don't really need a Legolas with a bunch of weapons on him when you've got 15 dwarves ready to go to war.
I think one of the things we've seen is, like, kind of building upon what you're saying, Dan, is on the one hand, we've seen tactics becoming a bit more necessary because quests have started to evolve away from straight just putting progress tokens on it to in Against the Shadow cycle. In this current cycle, we see a lot of, like, quests that require a lot of attack power or combat ability. You know, taking the Three Trials as an example, you really need to have strong defense right out of the gate and be able to soak up all these attacks, which kind of calls for tactics. But then on the other hand, we see more and more the other spheres kind of encroaching on tactics's territory as far as getting more high attack heroes in the other spheres. You know, now in spirit we have both Glorfindel and I don't even know how to pronounce her name. Is it Idraeen?
Sounds right.
Well, we learned that it's not Dane from Master of Lore, which rocked my world. It's I'm not going to try to say it, and I will always say Dane. Sorry, Master. But it's got an accent mark.
Idraeen. The pronunciation is
Dane. I don't like that. It's like dine out. I just don't like that.
That's why I keep returning to the king in my back pocket.
There you go.
The pronunciation right.
No problem.
Sorry, you didn't mean to us there.
I'll keep it as that. Has three attack as well. So you have 2-3 attack heroes in spirit. So anyway, the point is, you know, even though we are getting these quests with more that require tactics more in theory, you're also getting other spheres kind of dabbling into tactics' territory, which maybe makes it not as necessary.
Yeah, there's one other thing. I was playing a deck with Aomer and all his, now that he's got his own horse, he's turned into quite a force to be reckoned with, but I noticed another issue that I've found can hurt tactics quite a bit with a lot of the tricks you would want to do is that you'll handle the normal generic enemies in a quest no problem, but then when it comes to the boss, if they're immune to card effects, stuff like Rivendell Blade doesn't work, Feint doesn't work, various effects from the mount, you know, like trying to use Firefoot to do trample damage. Well, you can't assign that trample damage to something that's immune. So, like, it's another thing that's interesting where tactics is really good at combat, but in some cases, all that, you know, all those cards with all those great effects don't do you any good if they specifically target an enemy, and the one enemy you would want to kill is the one thing that they can't touch.
And then, of course, Sneak Attack Gandalf is always the great equalizer. Because you get so many options, he gets so many spheres almost encapsulated into one. Because you got the direct damage for tactics, the card draw of lore, threat reduction of spirit. So having him around always helps neutralize an enemy when you don't have the tactics necessarily to do it.
Yeah, for anyone, just to speak to Gandalf really quickly. There's a lot, been a lot of chatter on the forums saying that the new hero Gandalf is completely broken. And I can definitely see some solo decks being built around him that are going to be pretty amazing when people figure out the different tricks you can do once per phase with his ability. But in multiplayer, and we're going to see this at Gen Con because we had to, you know, all exclude Gandalf from the rest of our decks, you know, since Ian's going to run him as the hero. It's going to be interesting to see
but,
how...
You know, let me add quickly that, Dan, I'm cutting you off here. It's the antioxidants. The limitation of using hero Gandalf is that we can't use either ally version. And that is, I think, a powerful limitation indeed, in addition to the new hero version of Gandalf not being able to pay for cards in hand unless they are neutral. But with that said, I haven't built a deck in years, at least a year, with Gandalf. I forget neutral cards exist. I think the spheres are to a point now that we don't really need core set Gandalf anymore, which is my favorite version of the two. So I think you're absolutely right that the hero version does limit us to that, but I just don't use core set Gandalf as much anymore. There's other means to achieve the same sorts of things, or decks are varied enough. I almost forget to look at neutral cards of any variety. I love the Envoy of Pelargir, or from Pelargir, whatever she is, the one that adds a resource to a hero. But I forget to even look at her sometimes in decks because it's neutral, because I think the spheres are at a point where it's okay. So I think a Gandalf hero a year ago, year and a half ago, early in the game's life, would have been much more of a hindrance than it actually is now.
Yeah, it's always a nice surprise when you flip to the back of the binder and realize, oh yeah, there's still neutral cards that plug a lot of holes in your deck flaws.
Yeah.
But before we kind of move away from this subject, let's talk about some of the other options for combat effectiveness besides tactics. You guys mentioned the big offensive spirit heroes, Glorfindel and Idraine. We talked about the mass army of dwarves. What are some other ones? Because, like, for example, defense. I mean, Baragon's kind of the go-to guy for defense. Maybe what are some other options for having a big defender if you're not using tactics in your deck?
Denethor is the classic defender, and he's a target for the Gondorian Shield if someone is playing tactics and can afford that.
Or Protector of Lorien in Sphere is another good option for him. Mm-hmm. And obviously a Burning Brand.
Yeah, I forgot how good a Burning Brand was until I think it was one of our online games, Matthew, recently. It was, don't even have to worry about that shadow card.
Especially with the chaining shadows of a lot of the recent quests, yeah.
Definitely playing Spirit. You know, I've played a lot of Mono Spirit, and Frodo's just the super defender for that sphere because you have the threat reduction in sphere. So it's kind of one of those things that makes tactics not necessary if you're playing Spirit or Mono Spirit, because you can just have Frodo available. Or, you know, Blood of Numenor is a good attachment for Spirit that came out as well that can kind of help with that.
Well, I guess all that kind of begs the question, can mono tactics work? We already kind of threw the gauntlet down on Theoden and that he's not popular for a reason. So can mono tactics work solo?
In the right quest, yeah. In some of the Heirs of Numenor, like, I've made a mono tactics that will crush... crush into Ithilien or Peril and Pelargir, and Siege at Carandros is a bit tougher, but some of the new cards are actually helping a lot with that, though, honestly. I think a really underrated card that I've found tremendous use for in some of the more recent playthroughs I've had is Gondorian Discipline, because not having healing is something that, against stuff like archery, where, sure, a mono tactics deck, once you engage something, you're going to be able to kill pretty much whatever it is, even if it's a giant orc army. You know, hopefully by the middle of the game, you've got all your weapons out, you got all your tricks ready to go. But with archery, since that goes off at the beginning of the combat phase before you can kill that thing, you know, having damage start to stack up on your heroes, and then, you know, there's only so many feints in your deck to stop the potentially bad shadow effects. Well, what do you do about the, you know, not having healing? And that's where Close Call, the new Doomed card, and then also Gondorian Discipline, I think, are actually really good in a mono tactics deck.
So before we move on a bit, I kind of want to just ask a question. I've become an exclusive multiplayer player lately. I know Dan and Derek, you guys have pretty solid local play groups as well. When you guys get together to play, is there a sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? Is there a designated tactics player? Not necessarily meaning the same person every week, but is it something you guys are wanting to include, or do you just get together and play without it? In other words, I'm asking, in your experiences in different parts of the country with different kinds of players and I play with, do you guys find that you need tactics when you get together with a play group at your local gaming store?
I'll start by saying yes. And part of the reason is because, as I've said before, I'm really the Lord of the Rings guy, and occasionally I'll be able to have the time to be intentional with my decks, and I usually like to have a strong tactics deck, especially recently, mostly because we've been enjoying the new cycle of quests, and there's a lot of combat in those, and being a deck builder of medium skill, perhaps, I definitely liked the straightforward crushing ability of tactics to deal with Dunlendings and stuff, especially when you throw in some ranged guys like Legolas and Bran. So to me, it's just easier, especially dealing with the newer quests, to have a deck that's at least two-thirds tactics.
What about you, Dan?
Yeah, so we tend to, it tends to be a lot more ad hoc in terms of people will show up at a designated time and bring whatever decks they have, and then we kind of come up with a scenario and then choose decks accordingly. Once we've decided the scenario. But one of the things we've been trying to do more recently is everyone kind of coordinated via email and said, okay, we're all going to make Monosphere decks, you know, four of us are, and we're going to show up with those decks and try and play them together. And even that didn't go as well as we would have liked, just because the decks individually were fine, but they didn't really necessarily synergize that well.
Right.
And also, I think that certain Monosphere decks, like I actually made the Mono Lore deck, and it was an okay deck, but it Mono Lore really suffers from like being expensive, needing resources, and I wasn't exactly going to use Grima and start raising everyone else's threat. So, long story short, the whole issue of like who plays what deck is one that we kind of deal with on the spot, and typically someone's always got. I wouldn't say tactics in general. Someone's almost always got Legolas in our group, I would say. Like, specifically, just because he's so good in multiplayer. And the interesting thing, too, that I've found is even... Like, I'll have decks where I have tactics maybe for some tricks, but I don't even really... Like, the tactics hero isn't even really my primary attacker, necessarily. Or it's, you know, like, it might be Merry or something where I'm just going to do some readying tricks. And then I also would include Rivendell Blades because I know that someone at the table, when you're playing with four people, somebody's playing Glorfindel, or someone's playing Legolas, or, you know, it's pretty much like a safe assumption that there's going to be some Sylvan and Noldor on the table. So I've definitely done that in the past where I've included a single tactics hero or even songs or some other way to get at the tactics sphere, and then included weapons that I'm basically going to hand out to other people, because Rivendell Blade on Legolas can make all the difference in the world, especially like Derek was saying, some of these scenarios are really, you know, combat heavy, and that's where when we talk about what tactics is good at, when you can make a hero that's already like just out of the box, Legolas is an amazing hero. When you give him Rivendell Blade, and then, you know, I'll include Rivendell Bow as well because I really like that. I think that's an incredibly underrated card, and then like right there, he's basically attacking for four range and neutralizing two of the defense. And then there's all sorts of tricks you can do. You can hands upon the bow to have him attack immediately and quick strike and yada, yada, yada. So you start to get to where you have a kind of like an auto-kill guy that's going to be able to kill stuff. And then it also mitigates my other gripe that I had from our last episode, which is the whole location lock thing, where he's, you know, the more you, like, maybe even stick Rohan Warhorse on him or whatever, where you're getting multiple attacks or you're using... Unexpected Courage, and you're starting to actually get like four or six progress a turn just from Legolas, which is pretty significant.
God, I still want an ally, Caleb. Come on, make it. Where you can make an active location outside of the travel phase. Because, man, I get so frustrated sometimes when Legolas clears a location and then we have no active. And so, yeah, I mean, sometimes that can make progress on the quest, but if you've got five or six locations in the staging area, it can be frustrating.
Yeah, that is a looming hole.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because it has always bothered me that the was West Road Traveler, because it says switch, and they even included it in the errata where the FAQ where they're like, you have to have two things to switch, so you can't use her to like make something the active when there's no active. Yeah, that is frustrating.
you're right about the tactics toys, though, because when I was building our Gen Con decks, or at least building my Gen Con deck, I was like, do I want Citadel Plate for Gimli, or do I want something else? And I ultimately went with Ringmail, because I was like, well, Citadel Plate, for one, is expensive. But two, Ringmail's cheaper, but Ringmail goes on Hobbits. And since there are, you know, three or four Hobbit heroes that we'll be using, I can put one on Gimli to make him a little bit sturdier and put the rest on Hobbit. So I think you're right that tactics, even if it's just one hero in your deck, there's lots of toys that they have attachments that can be played on other characters of other spheres that are quite effective.
And I think that's a good segue to our next bit. We've established that tactics are super good at killing lots and lots of bad guys, which also makes them one of the more enjoyable spheres to play. Because, I mean, what else is there besides killing orcs?
Nothing. That's why Shadows of Mordor will be so good.
Peter Jackson approves this message.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. You read an article about hulking not too long ago. I think that's... I'm turning a little
hulking,
green here.
Like Tolkien? Oh, that's perfect.
Hulking, Tolkien. Mm-hmm. Anywho. when we talk about those fun cards to include in your decks to play on other characters, weapons, armor, things like that, let's get into options for splashing tactics, either in your deck or... maybe even with a song or two, even though songs kind of become a four-letter word these days. So along with that, so here's the question. What are our options for splashing tactics? And in addition to that, what are some of the more essential cards we want to use if we're splashing, or just some of your favorites?
Faint. I mean, if you're going to put tactics in, and it's the one here, one of your three heroes, I think Faint is part of the reason you're probably doing it.
Yeah, definitely Foe Hammer is kind of a key, depending on the deck. Like, if I'm splashing tactics into something with lore and have a bunch of card draw, I probably won't include it, but generally I'm kind of combining tactics with, like, leadership or maybe spirit, so I'll... Foe Hammer is kind of a must-have for me for some card draw.
I like Merry as a splash because he's low threat and he quests for a decent amount. Now, he's very, very fragile. I mean, a couple Necromancer's reaches and he's dead. But I've splashed him from time to time. I know I don't use him for anything other than I want access to tactics cards. He's low threat to willpower.
Yeah, he also has amazing combos if you want to get tricksy with him in multiplayer.
Indeed. If you're not questing with him and use him in, or can ready him, you know, in some other way, you're absolutely right.
We also, another weapon worth mentioning while you're talking about Merry is Dagger of Westerness, because there's a kind of a new, and it's interesting to say that about tactics, because if you're running multiple tactics heroes, you're obviously at that point running a high threat deck, but yep. when we're on the subject of splashing, especially if you splash Merry, it's actually possible now to make a tactics deck that starts within the secrecy threshold, which is kind of amazing. And at that point, Dagger of Westerness, and like another deck that I made recently that was a lot of fun, is uses daggers and uses Spear of the Mark and then Dunhir, and you know, and it had one tactics hero so that I could get at the weapons and all the, you know, Foe Hammer and all the other tricks. But it's cool now that there's weapons that are actually, they're not all alike in the way that they work. You know, you have different weapons for different strategies, and Dagger is a very, you know, it's good. I mean, you're going to get the +1 all the time, but it's really good when you can consistently get that +2. And then likewise with the Spear of the Mark, where you're putting it on Dune here and you're attacking the staging area. At that point, with a couple of spears or a dagger and a spear, he's pretty formidable. And it's, you know, you can really start to actually be killing enemies consistently every turn with him, which is cool.
Yeah. And don't forget Unseen Strike.
Yep.
Yeah. I would say Legolas, to me, is probably, if I'm going to only use one, if it's not Merry, it's probably Legolas. One, because he's ranged, so he can snipe across the table, provided someone else can defend it. But two, just, I mean, adding progress is still just so, so useful.
Another couple of tactics cards that I kind of love to splash. One we've already mentioned is Gondorian Shield, which is just, you know, you can splash it into lore, put it on Denethor, Elrond. If he has the Steward on him, you can, you know, throw it into leadership with Elrohir, again, using the Steward and its magical Gondor-granting powers. Throw it into Spirit with Elanor. So Gondorian Shield is just, you know, one of the biggest cards, I think, that's come out in the last couple of cycles. Another key tactics card that I've found myself splashing a lot lately, which would have sounded crazy back in the core set days, is Bjorn. You know, he costs 6, so
it was a bit difficult, but now, you know, there's always been the sneak attack Bjorn possibilities, but now there's stuff like timely aid and leadership, Elfstone and lore. There's lots of ways to get him into play, and once he's there, he can just, you know.
He's a beast.
Yeah, certainly, we're talking about splashing, but certainly, I think I put him in my Gen Con deck because I'm mono tactics with Horn of Gondor. I mean, man, he's coming out, and I'm popping him, just so you know, Dan. I'll be picturing that I'm popping you. But yeah, he's a good hero. And you're right, I think with Elfstone as a great way to drop, or Elrond able to play allies of any sphere, I think that, yeah, he's a pretty decent one, and he brings quite a bit of attack strength that other decks may not have. What do we think of Bjorn the Hero? Man, I love the hero, but is he worth splashing?
I've done it before. I mean, it's weird to splash a high threat hero, but the reason why is he's conditionally amazing in certain scenarios with a lot of weenie enemies where you would normally be taking potentially dangerous undefended attacks from low attack strength enemies. Massing is a great example of that, where just like I've made decks where he was my only tactics, and I included some feints to help out other players, some, you know, like vassals to help with the range with other players, and then basically just him, and then the rest of my deck was other stuff, you know, leadership and some support cards, and then basically he just, like, honestly, he's an amazing hero, even if you just look at him as I'm only really going to use him for the first half of the game, and then after that he's going to kind of sit around and maybe make some attacks. Is just soaking up that initial onrush and massing of Osgiliath, where there's, you know, each player has three enemies engaged, and or three enemies in play, and then the one scout's going to auto engage, and the other one's likely to engage somebody. So you have a lot of attacks you're dealing with round one, and then he can tank a lot of that, and obviously take some damage along the way, and then later on in the game when you want to still have those resources around, you just stop blocking with him, and his five attack is still pretty useful, you know. So.
Yeah, I've definitely underutilized Bjorn recently. I got to get him back into the mix.
Yeah, I love him every time I use him. But I even myself, and I agree, I underuse him a lot. But I think he's far undervalued for what he can do.
Yeah, and even though his threat is high, if you could couple him with some of the lower threat spirit heroes and still have a pretty solid deck because they've got questing on lockdown. And Bjorn himself, depending on the quest, of course, Bjorn could basically single-handedly take on defense and attack.
Yeah, and if you're using spirit, it's pretty easy to set it up where you can include fortune or fate and pay for it and just, you know, sacrifice Bjorn, bring him back at full strength. And
yeah, that's exactly why splashing him, as weird as it sounds, is helpful. I think the last time I splashed him, it was actually lore was my other sphere, but I was using Dory, I want to say, and where you can redirect the damage, and if you've got multiple copies of Dory and you've got maybe a Horn of Gondor in play, so you're like basically using that as kind of a cheap way to like, oh, Bjorn's not going to exhaust to defend, but it's some crazy big attacker. Well, I'll go ahead and sacrifice a Dory, gain my resource from Horn of Gondor. Bjorn swings back next turn, play another Dory. You know, like you can. There's just all sorts of tricks you can do, and it's also worth mentioning that the new close call, the new doomed card that a lot, you know, I think. Some people aren't really convinced that card's good, and I think it depends, but with Bjorn, I definitely see the value there is, you know, certainly in solo.
I would say I'm not convinced on that card, but yeah, I can see the value with him in particular. I think if you're splashing Bjorn and you're not using his resources for much, Dan, you mentioned you don't put a lot of cards there. I think Landreval, of course, the old standby, is a great way to have him soak up a lot of damage and come back for free.
Yeah.
To me, though, I mean, my buddy Josh, shout out, that I've been playing a lot with lately, he splashes Baragond in his spirit decks, and my God, is that ever helpful. And I can build my deck appropriately. So Rumul, I must say, my favorite ally of all time, I think. I've been loving my Rumul deck. It is fantastic. Whenever he hits the table, he's nuking something. It's on par with Gandalf, and sometimes even more. Or he can get past the defense of a really high defense enemy. Man, love, love, love him. But because I have to have a lot of ranged heroes and a lot of ranged characters to make Rumul worth it, my tactics deck does not defend very well. And so by splashing Baragond into his deck, we've really had some potent combinations and been able to stomp a lot of quests. So Baragond might even be a decent splash hero, I think.
Yeah,
because he really is the best defender in the game, especially with Gondorian Shield. And so in my deck, I include Gondorian Shield and Behind Strong Walls, and so does Josh's deck. And with six copies of Behind Strong Walls, I mean, Baragon is just defending pretty much ad nauseum.
And honestly, with 10 starting threat, that's actually relatively low for by tactics standards. So,
and Ian already mentioned the options. I keep going back to Spirit just because it's coming to mind. But Ian already mentioned the options for some high attack Spirit heroes, Glorfindel and Idraine. And so having them plus Baragon, you've got your attacks covered, especially with the ubiquitous Light of Valinor on Glorfindel's freeing him up to attack.
Right.
I mean, I think really, you know, one of the best tactic splashing heroes, even though his threat is kind of high, is Boromir, just because of that redding effect. He can kind of, especially if you give him Gondorian Shield or Support of the Eagles, there's a bunch of options, Blood of Numenor, he can be both attacking and defending, so in a way, that's a perfect splash, and that you're covering all aspects of combat with just the single hero, leaving your other heroes, whatever sphere they come from, to kind of cover everything else.
Yeah, I've also really liked Owen from one of our Hobbit sagas. I think he's a very undervalued hero, and I don't use him as much anymore because I haven't played dwarf decks in a really long time. But I had wished forever and ever and ever to have a dual sphere hero, and he doesn't quite meet the definition of what I wanted, which was just a printed, you know, having both icons. It was a way for me to have tactics to pay for Erebor Battlemaster or Ringmail or some of these other cool dwarf tactics cards once I hit the 5 dwarf threshold, and yet still have Test of Wills and all these other things. And I've always really liked that hero, but I'm not sure he's friendly to splashing, and I'm not so sure he's friendly outside of dwarf decks, but he is a cool way to get tactics without really having it, if that makes sense.
You really have to plan for your late game if you're using Owen, like especially if he's your only tactics sphere, because so it might be good to punt out some battle masters later in the game or something like that. But you're right; you do have to plan around it.
Yeah, I would love to see more heroes like that. I mean, certainly not too many, because then Owen loses his specialness, I suppose. But the other one, you know, because Elrond kind of is every sphere, Gandalf kind of is every sphere. But I'd like something more simple in the realm of Owen, where either we have a flat-out dual-sphere hero, which I don't know if they ever want to go there, at least not this early in the game's life, or someone else who can gain a sphere through if certain conditions are met, whatever those conditions are, I think would be pretty cool.
Yeah, Aragorn is the one other guy that really is that. I mean, either version of Aragorn.
Different versions.
Can get Celebrian Stone, and can get sword that was broken, and then even Ring of Barahir gives a resource icon. So, yeah... He just
needs the tactic sphere at this point. It's the one he doesn't have. Is that right?
Yeah, that is. That's the one. But yeah, I'm not as hip to Owen or Oin or however the hell you say his name as you are. Just because
this is our last episode.
I think that there's so many good options for getting cross sphere stuff in dwarves, and I mean Narvi's belt is perfect. Yeah, and if you're running dwarves, you probably should be running leadership, just because the cards in that sphere for dwarves are kind of ridiculous.
Can you make a good harvest work, or is that, because I like that card a lot, but it's not as versatile as some of the other ones. So if you just had like feint or some armor or something, would a good harvest be an option, or is that, or you can just shut me down if I'm wrong here?
I wouldn't use it, but I don't know. What do you guys think?
Let me go to Hall of Bjorn and look up that card, because I don't remember what it
does.
It
went right in the binder.
I mean, I'll jump in while Matthew's looking. If you're going to include a good harvest, you might as well just include a more permanent form, whether it's Narvi's belt or a song, rather than doing a one-time use of that. That would be my 2 cents on that.
I just really want to use that card.
No
need
wonder
some validation
I remember
here, guys.
It comes from the adventure pack that shall not be named, i.e. the freaking Outland's adventure pack. Never used it, would never consider it, ever. It's far too situational. When I need it, it won't be in my hand. When I have it in my hand, I won't have the spheres cards I want to pay for.
So the belt is so versatile, and as Ian said, is permanent. And then honestly, songs are good, and there are actually ways to get songs, because the problem with the harvest is, other than I guess this new Galadrim minstrel thing that's been spoiled, I guess you could use that to get it, but it's, I don't know, attachments, in this sense, if you're gonna include, if you're gonna splash cards in your deck, you're gonna want to splash enough of them to really make it worth it. Like I would say, I don't think I've ever made a deck where I just had like three feints and those are the only tactics cards in the deck. That would be kind of strange. Mm-hmm. You're gonna find that over the course of the scenario, you're gonna pile up a bunch of tactics resources, and unless you have some way of moving them around, that's basically just waste. So you always want to splash like enough to make splashing worth it, and at that point, to me, an attachment that gives you that other sphere is just a more solid choice. Like Song of Battle, and then if you're using lore, having, you know, Rivendell Minstrels, which are just good in and of themselves anyway. You know, even like drawing a minstrel and not needing a song, it's still a useful questing ally. So yeah, I don't know. I'm not a fan of the events for resource fixing. I think attachments are a better approach.
Now, certainly there's more attachment hate. I mean, I played Peril and Pelargir this past weekend, or this weekend. It's only Sunday. And man, we were losing attachments left and right because of those shadow effects. And so, in a way, attachments, while permanent, are also more fragile to treacheries or shadow effects. But in general, I would say, yeah, some sort of attachment is probably a better option than that card.
Yeah, shadow effects, I think, in recent cycles have been getting worse. And so there was a while where I had taken Hasty Stroke out of a lot of my decks that had Spirit. And honestly, it's coming back. And I'm also really starting to consider getting Burning Brand back into my decks, too. Yeah, the attachment hate is definitely a recent trend to be on the lookout for any deck that's going to... I mean, obviously, Tactics is... half the cards we've named that are really good in Tactics are attachments, so it's something to be mindful of. And other than Feint and Direct Damage, Tactics does not really have a way to solve shadow cards. That's one kind of weakness is, and it's the one thing that makes me nervous about calling, like, Baragon is a super defender, but the last Baragon deck that I made and played in multiplayer, it happened to be against a quest that had Chaining Shadows, and he died a terrible death because and the thing is, I had a Gondorian shield, and it wasn't the spear. I had something else. I had I think someone put a Citadel plate on him. Someone had a Gimli deck, and they put a Citadel plate on him. So he was an amazing defender at that point. But six shadow cards later, and 13 damage, and he's dead. You know, like it's still possible even to kill an amazing defender with some of these sets where they just keep adding shadow cards and additional attacks and direct damage, and next thing you know, he's gone. So it is something to be mindful of.
See, that's why you bring in the new Gandalf hero with his staff, and he'll discard the shadow effect, and everything will be okay.
Risking some light.
I think the staff is one of the most powerful things about
sure,
that hero,
yeah.
Honestly.
You can,
is that what it does?
Yeah.
How am I forgetting
it
that?
It does one of three things.
Yeah, you can give a resource, article. Draw a card, or discard a shadow. It's pretty amazing, yeah.
Oh, right. So you can discard it even after you've revealed it, or you have to do it beforehand?
Well, you have that action window after it's revealed, don't you?
Oh, you do.
Did you listen to our last episode, Matthew?
Oh my god, I was on it. Well, Gandalf's broken.
And Gandalf with the tactics deck, he has the three willpower, he can help with willpower, so there's a lot that will happen with the new Gandalf, but we'll save that for post-Gen Con episode.
Yeah.
Right.
One other card I want to propose, since I'm doing so well, before we maybe move on to our fun segment, is let's talk about Trained. I think it's the right one. Trained for War. Is that because we talked about the mono tactics solo deck? Does that help with the questing at all,
no.
Or is that just
no?
Is that
the one that makes it a battle
quest?
Yes.
I never use it because while my deck might quest well for a turn. No one else can quest, or they contribute like two, and then all of my heroes have quested.
Put your solo cap on.
For solo?
So here's my question.
Don't play tactics.
Here's my question. And this is the same issue I have with Theoden, is the premise to me is broken, because if I'm playing a quest solo, and I'm playing mono tactics, that better have two out of the three, or three out of the four quest stages better be battle to begin with, or it begs the question, why am I bringing a mono tactics to that scenario?
What if it's something that's super, and again, I'm more playing Morgoth's advocate more than anything else, but what if it's something like...
I don't think the Valar need advocates, Derek. No, I'm just...
You've been deceived, my friend. What if something like Morgul Vale, that's almost strictly...
Right. I mean...
Then you have to fight, and you use all your heroes to quest. So you don't waste your time.
So here's the thing: like, if that's my strategy, then exactly, I'm going to run Hama, yeah, and I'm going to run away to get it back, because it, like, a one turn, like, oh great, it was a battle quest and I made some progress. Oh, next turn they go back to having crappy willpower and I can't make any progress and I get location locked and I die. Oh, that was great. So you pretty much are doing it every turn. But here's the problem then you have is I'm running Hama.
It also costs two.
It costs two, and I have to ditch a card every time I want to do it. So really at that point you're sacrificing resources and cards to get this every turn make it a battle quest, when to me it's like, well, why not just play Spirit? Like, you know, play Spirit, splash a single tactics hero that you load up with weapons, and he's your guy to deal with the fact that you have boss enemies at each of the stages, right?
So, Derek, here's your problem. You came into the game, your first full cycle was against the Shadow. So you want to play all these cards, but here's a pro tip. Against the Shadow is the worst cycle when it comes to player cards ever, so don't... I mean, I really don't use any of them. Very, very few. Heirs of Numenor, I like. But outside of that, I don't know if my standard decks use anything from Against the Shadow.
You use Gondorian Shield like it's going out of style.
But outside of that card, I don't think I use anything from this cycle. At least very, very, very few. I don't like Against the Shadow as a cycle for player cards. The quests are okay. But, I mean, two costs for that, it's just... I like the idea, and this is a whole other show topic, of trying to make Monosphere work. But... for two costs and tactics, that's just not the way to do it.
The thing is, like, the Monosphere decks can, you know, in my opinion, three out of the four can work really well against a variety of quests: Mono Leadership, Mono Spirit, and Mono Lore, even leaving aside those Monosphere events, because those events don't really add much except for the Leadership one. But because they are all... they have their own specialties, but all... kind of branch out into a variety of different areas of the game, especially Leadership and Spirit, and to an extent Lore, that they can handle a lot of quests, whereas Mono Tactics, you know, leaving aside Train for War, whether or not it's an effective card, it just doesn't have the rest of the card pool to back it up as a solo deck. I mean, I'm not saying it can't work, because I know people are going to pop up and say, I made this solo deck and I beat these quests. It can. The problem is, like you guys are saying, you're going to all this trouble to kind of make this thing work that you could do much easier and more effectively just by splashing something else in. In order for Mono Tactics to really get to where it needs to go as far as solo, even beyond the heroes, it just needs more willpower, and the allies is probably the number one thing that would have to happen, I think.
Yeah. I agree completely. And there's one thing that I want to qualify when I say that I think a card is good or not. I see comments all the time on the forums where people say, like, oh, you know, X, Y, and Z cards that just got bashed. Well, I made a deck around that card and it's awesome and it did blah blah blah. And that's great, and I'm not saying that it's not possible to make a deck with Train for War. But when I judge a card, I'm judging it in terms of trying to just legitimately beat a scenario in a straightforward manner. So, for example, when people post these examples of, like, doing some crazy recursion thing and getting some weird thing set up where they spend 30 rounds to beat a scenario, that's great, and I'm not denying that that exists in the game, but especially when you look at, like, the more recent scenarios, the last, you know, the first two in our latest cycle, these scenarios are punishing. Like, you get big enemies that come at you very quickly, and you have to have solutions very quickly. So when I make judgments about whether or not a card is viable, I'm not thinking about it in terms of, like, you know, in a vacuum where would it be possible to make a deck that uses Train for War and Hama and do some weird thing and battle quest with your all tactics army all day long. Like, sure, I'm sure it's possible to make that deck and spend 30 rounds and set this whole thing up and make that happen, but I'm not talking about these cards in a vacuum. I'm thinking about them in terms of, like, is that the kind of thing that I would want to do against, you know, the Three Trials or the Dunland Trap? And the answer is hell no, because those scenarios and any of the really good, you know, the more recent scenarios tend to be really good at challenging you. They're going to come at you very quickly, and you cannot spend three rounds setting up your clever little combo. You have to have an answer.
Yeah, I mean, I think just long term, it kind of raises the question. Like, we did our Spirit episode where we all pretty much concluded, I think, that Spirit kind of, in a lot of ways, has it all. Maybe not it doesn't include some of the key effects, but more so than a lot of the other spheres, it has access to a lot of things, and it's getting more so that way over time with, you know, it can, spirit can hold its own in combat these days without much struggle. It can do threat reduction, all those things. And, you know, sometimes people are a little worried about it encroaching too much into, say, Tactics' territory or other spheres' territory. Whereas Tactics, on the other hand, it is, you know, probably the most specialized of the spheres. And are the designers going to choose to try to make it viable for solo play at some point by bringing in those high willpower characters, which, you know, again, starts breaking down the walls between the spheres. So it's a tough one.
Right. I certainly have no insight into FFG's business plan. Ian, you said this the other day on a thread on the forums, or how much LOTR is actually making for money. But it, you know, where I'm getting is, I don't know if, and they probably don't know this either, but is it primarily played by solo players, or is it primarily played by multiplayers, or is it an even mix between the two? But I've said time and time again, the strength of this game is at the fact that you can approach cards from a different perspective. Some people only play the game solo and have never played it monosphere. While I find that a very limited look on the game, having been primarily solo for the first year, year and a half, and been primarily multiplayer the second year, year and a half of this game's life, they need cards for them. And multiplayer players need their cards as well. And so Tactics, to me, is the sphere that should never be made solo-friendly. And as someone who loves Tactics, only wants to play Tactics, I don't want them to have high-will-powered heroes or allies. And if they do, they need to cost a ton. Like Beaufort costs a lot, or Theoden, or whomever. You know, he's a drawback in many ways. But I don't want the bleeding of the spheres. And in a sense, Tactics, as you were just saying, Ian, has remained the most sort of pure or true to its core set sort of mantra. Whereas the other spheres, I think, are bleeding far, 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 far too much, to where the point now spheres don't even matter. That's maybe an extreme statement, but they are bleeding more than Tactics ever has. And I wish they need to have their own weaknesses. Otherwise, there's no point in having spheres in the first place. We should just have traits by race or gender or whatever the hell we're going to have in this game. So I like the fact that Tactics has remained sort of niche, and it does its thing, and it does its things well. Whereas all these other, like I said, spheres are sort of, leadership can encroach, it's the jack of all trades, but I guess I'm speaking mostly about spirit and lore. They're starting to do things that I just don't think they should do. Faramir's getting his attack boosted by number of enemies, that should be Tactics. I mean, come on. Or, you know, Mirkwood Runner, you ignore the defense of a character if you attack alone. Okay, there's at least a restriction there, but those are just two examples. Spirit, certainly. Some folks don't like our newest hero because she's another three-attack hero in a sphere that shouldn't be all that good at attacking.
That is an example.
And
of
I can understand these arguments. Yeah. And so I think, and I remember talking to Caleb at Gen Con last year, and he told me that this game is not designed with traits in mind. That was the initial decision made by Nate French, and Caleb was honoring that decision. Spheres are the basis for design. But I feel like they've gotten away from that a little bit. Maybe I'm wrong. I would love to hear y'all's thoughts. But I don't want them to encroach too much
on
themselves.
They haven't gotten away from it in Tactics. I agree in general with what you're saying about the bleed. And Idrien is definitely an example of the bleed because her stats are just very out of character. And having a high starting threat is also very out of character for Spirit. And I'm not saying she's not a good hero. She is a good hero. It's just,
oh, I love her.
It's just she's weird in that sphere. And there's one thing very specific that I'm going to add to what you said about the solo mono tactics thing. Is there's a specific reason why mono tactics is not viable solo, even in my opinion, even with Theoden, and that is the way that their readying effects work, with the exception of Boromir. And mono tactics, mind you, other than Corset Gandalf, would have no way of lowering its threat. With the exception of Boromir, there is no readying effect in Tactics that is at will. And they're all conditional. Right. And when you look at them, they're all amazingly thematic. I really like Rohan Warhorse. I really like Behind Strong Walls. Like, there's all these ways to ready a, or to either ready a tactics character or to make them not exhaust to attack or defend, and there's even allies that don't exhaust to attack or defend, and the hero in the case of Bjorn. So it's all very thematic. They're combat oriented, and they, and if they're going to ready, it's going to ready, it's going to be readying as a result of killing something. And even the, I even like Foehammer. At first I was kind of shocked by that card, but I really like that it's, you killed a guy, yeah, and you get to draw three cards. It's very, yeah, it's very thematic.
With a weapon.
With a weapon. Exactly. So tactics has the least bleed. I agree with that. And I'd say it's the most thematic. And what you would need to see to make tactics solo viable is you would need to see at, well, you would need to see Atwill readying, because you would have Theoden and, you know, Éomer and, you know, what, whoever else you're running, and then, or, you know, maybe you'd run your two, your, the few tactics heroes that also that have two willpower, so that you can be, you know, that much better. But the point is, you'd send those guys to the quest for a, you know, a very decent amount of willpower, especially considering its tactics, but then they're all exhausted. And so unless you had some way of readying them, which I hope they never add that, like, Caleb, if you're listening, do not do this. Do not add a, do not add any kind of right. any kind of a global or any kind of an at-will readying effect to tactics, because it would be such an example of bleed, where that's a leadership thing, first of all. Right. And it would make mono tactics viable in a way that kind of breaks the game, because at that point it's like, oh, well, now they just did a really decent job of questing, and they're right. already, and they're going to do combat. And it's just like, well, what would you need the other spheres for at that point?
Every sphere needs its weakness, or there's, again, there's no point. Like in Magic the Gathering, the quintessential CCG, the five colors all excel at something and are really bad at something else. And if they encroach upon the territory that they're not good at, the cards cost a lot, or there are severe restrictions. And I think this game needs to do the same thing. If tactics is going to get readying, as it currently has, it needs to be severely limited. If spirit's going to be getting decent attack power, it needs to be limited, or defense, it needs to be limited in some way. I don't know what that way would be. But otherwise, yes, the spheres mean nothing. Not every sphere should be able to do everything. I don't mind mixing races. As I've said, my local game group now throws this quote back at me. I'm no slave to theme. They joke about it all the time. But I don't mind having a dwarf fighting with a human, fighting with an elf, because that's what Middle-earth is all about. That's what the Lord of the Rings is all about. Different races coming together to overcome an adversary. And so, to me, there's nothing more thematic than that. But with that said, I want things to be different. I want to have deck decisions that are, well, I could add this, but then run this sphere, but then I won't do this very well. Those are fun deck-making decisions. If I can run one sphere all the time and they do everything very well, then I think this game has jumped the shark and it's not worth playing.
Yeah, just to jump in on one point, I think, to me, the bleeding, like you said, is all about, if you are going to bleed, you have to make it tied to the sphere's theme in some way, or expensive. And that's why I think Adrian is not too problematic to me, because she is 11 threat. It's kind of a higher cost that you're going to have to bear. To me, right. the real problem is not her, it's Glorfindel. Because of his low threat, you yes. can combine the two to have 6 attack with what, 16 starting threat with those two heroes.
Yeah,
which and is Glorfindel ridiculous. Did not, he had a so-called penalty, but it's not really a penalty, right? We all know that. It's laughable. Like Glorfindel should have been 12 threat in that sphere, or even higher, 13 threat, just to really,
or just he right just, by one every time he quests with
without
him,
any way to stop that, because then that would really make it, you know, right. yeah, okay, you're a spirit player and you want to be able to attack, you're gonna have to pay for it. Now it's like you can just put it in there and not break a sweat. So that's the real problem to me.
So before we conclude this episode, we want to take a second to talk about some of the characters we think will be great in the tactics sphere that we may or may not see in upcoming expansions. So Dan, who is your pick for the next great tactics character?
I'm going to go with Faramir, and it goes back to Matthew's earlier comment. His ability is kind of... I understand why his ability is lore. There's a whole theme now around rangers and traps in the staging area and just tricks around sending enemies back to the staging area, all that kind of stuff. So I get it thematically. He doesn't quite work in lore, which is a problem, because he's one of my favorite characters, and I've tried multiple times to make solid decks around him as the central hero of the deck, and I have not been able to come up with one that I'm really happy with. But I think it would be really interesting if they made a tactics version of Faramir. Obviously, the ability would be different, but I think it would be cool if that ability did actually work with Great U-Bow, just in a different way than the current one does. But it's, you know, he was a great warrior in the books, not as great as Boromir certainly, but in his own right he was a captain of men. He was a great character, and he's one of my favorite characters. So I think it'd be really cool to see him as a tactics hero.
Well, that's the thing with a lot of these guys, because in addition to being a good warrior and leader, Faramir was also a scholar. So it's like, how do you capture those different facets of their person within a character? But like you said, it goes towards that Rangers of the South lore theme that they had going. But yeah, I'd like to see a tactics Faramir as well. How about you, Ian? Who's your next great character?
So mine is kind of the one I think everyone is waiting for or expecting to come in one of the last saga boxes, which is a tactics version of Eowyn. I think everyone wants... Well, I won't say everyone. Some people might not. But I think a lot of people want to see the more combat side of Eowyn, the Eowyn that faced down the Witch King. And so I'd love to see that. We have seen Rohan expand into tactics, so it would make sense. The only issue is traditionally heroes have kind of maintained their same stats between spheres, and kind of touching on some of what we've been talking about in the rest of the podcast. I think it would be a problem if you just kept a 4 willpower and tactics. You know, speaking of bleeding, that would just totally wreck everything. So, you know, while that has been tradition, I don't think there's anything written in stone that the designers have to keep that. So I think they can get creative and create a tactics Eowyn that doesn't give that sphere too much willpower. But I think something focusing that makes her like stronger when she's facing down the toughest enemies would make sense.
What if they gave her an attachment that said Durnhelm identity attached to Eowyn, and then it pumps her up? That might be an option. Write that one down. That was good. I'm going to make some money off that one.
You certainly could switch her stats, 1 willpower, 4 attack, but that's still quite a lot.
Yeah, I like Derek's idea. I think it would be interesting. We talked about in the past of doing like having a, you know, going back to the old scenarios and doing a campaign mode, and I also like the idea of having the permanent keyword, which is something they used in Black Riders. I think it'd be interesting to see some print on demand stuff that uses that, where you could have a Durnhelm permanent attachment that you start the game with on Eowyn, and it changes how she works. I think that would be pretty interesting, and you could do it with certain other characters as well. Like Aragorn had different aliases and different names that he went by, and you could have like a, you know, Aragorn Ranger of the North, like set up attachment that starts the game on Aragorn, and it you know, changes the way he works. I think that would be pretty cool.
What say you, Matthew? Who's your next character?
Well, when the second Hobbit saga expansion was coming out, myself, along with a lot of other players, were really, really, really hoping for a Gwaihir hero. To date, other than Beorn in his bear form, we haven't seen a non-humanoid hero. But my god, do I want an eagle hero. One, I think it could help some of the weaknesses of eagle decks. I mean, I don't know what ability I would give it, but give it something to offset some of their weaknesses. But I want Gwaihir so, so bad. The ally, to me, in many ways, is interesting, but a disappointment. I just really want Gwaihir to be a hero. I think he should be a hero. He's a king of eagles. I don't know. That's the one that I want the most. Now, is it likely? I don't know, but I certainly would love, 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 love to have it at some point in this game's life.
Yeah, I'd definitely like to see the eagles get a little more love in the future, and Gwaihir would be an easy way to do that, especially because we're getting some more of the actual leader heroes like Celeborn and guys like that. Right. But I'd really like to see an expansion of the Rohirrim's tactical side, maybe Erkenbrand as a hero, or some of the other minor Rohir, maybe Grimbold, or maybe a tactics Elfhelm, which would be cool because I'd like to see them as almost like an Outlands but properly balanced type of trait that is like a subset of the Rohirrim, maybe focused on combat or representing their infantry. Because I really like that scene in the books where Erkenbrand and Gandalf are coming down the hill, and so it could be like a helming trait or something like that, which would be a bunch of little guys to supplement Rohan as a tactics option for Rohan. I'd like to see that. But
and they could give all the other ones +1 attack for turning out.
Well, you see, there'd be four spheres represented. The leadership one would give him plus one defense.
Oh, okay.
Gotcha. And the and so on.
Do it. Make it happen. No, sorry.
All right.
I had to control that. I like the idea. It's all about not executing the way they did with Outlands.
Exactly. Yeah.
So before we move on to our conclusion, what do you guys? I want to sort of end with the question we started with. Do you think tactics is necessary in this game?
Yes.
Short and sweet. Ian, what about you?
I think I'm going to have to go with no. It goes back to the eternal it depends answer, which is, you know, are you playing multiplayer? Are you playing right. 3 or 4 player? I'd say 1 and 2 player, I would say definitely not necessary. Whereas I'd say spirit probably is pretty necessary, although not always. Tactics, I think, is more expendable. If you're getting to 3 or 4 player against the more battle-heavy quests, I think you might have to think about including tactics. If you're facing a huge enemy like Smaug in Battle Lake Town or something along those lines, then it probably is necessary.
So Ian did a really good job summarizing my take on it. So the one thing that I'm going to add is that whereas in the past, and you could see from Bjorn's path when I was doing leadership and lore, I didn't even use it at all. Is it necessary? I agree with it depends, and Ian very eloquently summed that up. But for me, I find myself using it in almost every deck that I choose to build lately, and the reason why is it's a
yeah.
hell of a lot of fun.
True.
Mm. Yeah, that was my thinking.
Yeah, I was going to say it might not be necessary, but it's sufficient to having a great yeah. time in this game. So I like to play it.
Absolutely. Well, this has been episode 13 of the Grey Company podcast. Thanks, as always, to you guys for listening. We appreciate it. Please check us out online at greycompanypodcast.wordpress.com. From there, you can find links to all of our many social media outlets. You can email us at thegreycompanypodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook. And be sure to like our Facebook page or follow us on Twitter. Matthew, you didn't know this, but we're going to set up a competition to see who can get the most responses for our Gen Con coverage between the nice. Twitter and the Facebook feeds. Winner,
oh my.
Loser buys the other a drink. So anyway, we have some special things planned for Gen Con. We're going to be posting lots of photos, lots of spoilers for any kind of Lord of the Rings stuff that's revealed. There will probably be some stuff with Tom Bombadil, which I'm very excited about. And all the other news that your little hobbit hearts desire. And if you are going to Gen Con, don't forget to come and see us. We'll be at the Cardboard of the Rings event at 10 o'clock Friday morning. We'll be at the Fellowship event Friday evening at 6. And after that, we'll all be going out to hang and talk shop. And it's going to be a great time.
Yeah, lots of antioxidants to be had.
What kind of savage schedules an event for 10 o'clock in the morning, though? That's my question.
Brandon, geez, come on, Brandon. Oh, that's pretty early. But it's not the first day. It's better than 10 a.m. on Saturday or Sunday, you know, when we're all really gamed out and hungover.
Well, assuming that it releases at Gen Con, our next episode will be a strategy session on The Road Darkens. If The Road Darkens does not release the way we think it's going to, we will be strategizing over something else. So thanks, as always, for listening, and good night.
Good night.
Good night. That's the card that I need to make a custom card for Gen Con is Trollomir, and that'll be for Matthew.
Troll.
Because he loves the troll.
Picture of me.